From your fryer to the table, it's a quick trip for crispy fries. But how about a crosstown delivery? McCain SureCrisp fries are designed to go from fryer to container to carrier to passenger seat across town during rush hour down a shortcut that wasn't all that short to a doorstep before they hit the table. And that first bite, the crispiness speaks for itself.
Mmm.
To the last bite, McCain SureCrisp fries go the distance. See how far our fries can take your business at surecrisp.com/delivery.
Hello, and welcome to Menu Talk with Pat and Brett. I'm your co-host, Brett Thorne, Senior Food and Beverage Editor of Nation's Restaurant News and Restaurant Hospitality.
And I'm Pat Kopy, Senior Menu Editor for Restaurant Business.
This is fun. Well, I don't know if our audience knows this, but we have spent a long time working at competing publications, but always being friendly. And now our publications are one big happy family. So the winners are us and our audience that gets to enjoy our witty and pithy observations.
For sure. And this is the first Menu Talk podcast. So welcome, everyone.
Yes, it's exciting. I hope it's one of many and that you all are eager and enthusiastic listeners. What are we going to talk about today, Pat? What's on your mind?
Well, I've seen a lot of pickles. Have you noticed a lot of pickles happening on menus?
There are so many. And so some of them were April Fool's jokes, like Ziggy's Coffee pretended that it was going to be putting pickle juice in its coffee for April Fool's Day. And I couldn't tell if it was fake or not, because, I mean, you know, Starbucks started adding olive oil to their coffee. Pickles are in everything. In Italy, you add a little bit of lemon zest to your espresso if you want. It tastes good. So why not? And I just had to press them and say, okay, is this serious or not? Because I can't tell.
And what did they say?
They said, yes, we're joking.
Okay, because I'm so gullible, I thought it was for real.
So did I. And you know, which is why before I, you know, actually reported on it, I said, is this fake? But then the same week, BJ's restaurants came out with their Pizzicle Pizzuki, which is their, you know, their traditional special dessert cookie in a pizza skillet with ice cream and stuff on top. And this one had ice cream and pickle slices. And I said, you're joking, right? And he said, no, but it's only going to be available on April Fool's Day. So I haven't checked to see if anyone bought it. Actually, they couldn't buy it. It was free with the purchase of $14.95 worth of other stuff. And then you got a free Pizzicle Pizzuki if you wanted one. I just really like saying Pizzicle Pizzuki.
Yeah, that's pretty hard to say. I'm not going to try.
But, I'm here for you. I'm here to take the bullet for you, Pat, anytime you need it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that because pronunciation is not my strong suit. But, you know, there have been a lot of pickles on pizzas, and that isn't something terribly new. But And Pizza, the, you know, really edgy pizza fast casual, just introduced the Dickle, which is a pickle top pizza. And it's drizzled with ranch dressing and garlic butter. So that's actually sounds really appealing. And it's not an April Fool's joke. It's going to be on the menu for a while. So I think it'll be popular.
Yeah, I'm curious about that because there are things that restaurants put on the menu for, you know, shock effect or to get attention. I mean, but pickles are something that a lot of people enjoy, especially younger generations are into the sour stuff. So yeah, I'd eat that.
Yeah. The BJ's one almost sounds like a joke that, you know, you would play on pregnant women because pickles and ice cream is like, you know, notoriously what they crave, but I don't think BJ's was doing that.
I'm going to have to follow up with them and see how did it do if anybody wanted it.
Right. Well, there were also a lot of eclipse items coming up because the eclipse is happening April 8th, or maybe, you know, by the time this comes out, it would have happened already. But as far as, you know, people doing eclipse specials, I mean, I think Sonic had a really cool one, and that's going to be on their menu through May or June. So people don't have to just get it on that particular day. But I think what they're doing that's really cool, it's a black slush with white ice cream, vanilla ice cream on top. But they're also giving everyone a free pair of glasses, and they're inviting them to sit in the parking lot and watch the eclipse. So I think that's really hospitable.
Yeah, and they're leveraging their distinguishing characteristics, including the fact that they have parking lots and food is brought out to you in them. And so they really,
Right.
it's very on brand, which I respect.
And they're big on drinks, and beverages. So this is, it fits all in.
Yeah, and they're huge on beverage innovation. And one thing they've started doing is allowing guests to make their sodas dirty, which is to say you can add coconut cream or dairy or whatever to it. And this kind of sounds like that a little, that it's black and it has ice cream. So it's also going to be ice cream, you said, right?
Yeah, it has soft serve on top, vanilla soft serve.
And so that's also going to be visually appealing, good for the Instagram and the TikTok. So smart all around.
Definitely. Well, the other thing that trended recently are, KFC's chicken nuggets. They came out, instead of having dipping sauces, they're dripping sauces. That's how they call them. And so the nuggets are actually coated in all these new, full-flavored sauces like honey sriracha and Korean barbecue. So it's not just your typical ranch dressing dip or honey mustard dip. These are really, much more characteristic.
Yeah, and yeah, I thought that was cool also. And there's been a lot of sauce innovation lately. I think in part because operationally it's so straightforward. Like, if you can create a completely new menu item and not really have to train anybody to do anything except, reach for a different sauce. And we've seen this on sandwiches and burgers and all over the place that it's a really straightforward way to get people's attention, a very impactful way from a flavor perspective, but in these times of difficult labor, it's not a huge challenge for the workers to learn a new thing.
Right. Well, and then, most of these chains actually partner with suppliers who create proprietary products. So it isn't really affecting their, execution at all. It's just, they just drizzle it on or drip it on, and there you go.
Right. Yeah. And the chefs at the chains probably consult. I'm sure they consult with the suppliers, but then the
Oh,
suppliers
yeah.
manufacture it for them. And yeah, that is a really straightforward way to create something new and not overtax your system.
Right. And it's a differentiator. I think I know that when I did a story on sauces a while ago, and Technomic found that people actually go to chains specifically if they have a differentiating sauce. That's what draws them into an operation. So I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, and it's, as I said, it's an easy kind of way of standing out without having to bring in more than one new SKU.
Definitely. And I was at this Unilever global food event last week called Future Menus. And actually, one of the things they talked about was flavor shock. That was like one of the big trends that are coming out as far as future menus go. And Gen Z is driving this flavor shock. And one of the things they're looking for are next level condiments. So that fits in with this whole sauce discussion that we're having.
Flavor shock.
Flavor
That's.
shock. So no more bold flavors. It's now flavor shock.
And this was in the Netherlands, right?
Right. It was in the Netherlands. It was a really cool event. They brought in 180 people from all around the world, and we had a lot of tasting occasions that I'd like. I am just starting to digest it all. It's a lot that we learned, but flavor shock really stuck with me because I've been using the word bold for so many years, I'm really tired of it. So shock is a much better word to use.
Yeah, and I think it is what younger generations want. They want something that really does stimulate or overstimulate their palates, or have it be visually appealing so that they can post it on the social media.
Definitely. So what else has been happening this week?
Well, I did an interview, it was actually a couple weeks ago, with Chef Pepe Moncayo, who is the chef of Cranes in Washington, DC. And it's an interesting name, Cranes. It's named after the bird. And that's because Pepe was born in Barcelona, and then he went to Singapore and he studied food in Japan, and then he came to the United States. And just as cranes are migratory birds, he has been a migratory person, sort of. And so one drunken night talking to people, because it's hard to figure out a name of a restaurant that isn't already there, and that.
Oh, definitely.
So he had a and in this drunken conversation, they're like, "Let's call it cranes, because that's what I am." And Pepe got his start cooking after his mom passed away when he was 13 years old. His father worked in a factory, so it was up to him to figure out how to feed his siblings.
So is it a fine dining restaurant or is it
Yeah,
casual?
it's a fine dining restaurant with tasting menus and other things. When I said it was fancy, he kind of objected to that. But let me play his for you his origin story.
My mom passed away when I was 13, and my dad used to work in a factory, and she was the person handling the family, and she was the leader, no? My father worked in the factory. I had a younger sister and an elder brother, and none of us know how to cook or whatsoever. So I started going to the market, following what I used to do. I used to go with my mother to carry the bag for her. So I just started going there, start cooking at home and developing a taste for it, but I really don't realize that I really, really like to do it. That was more than a necessity. In the moment that I was looking to choose which college I was going to go, and nothing caught my attention but going to culinary school. So I enrolled into culinary school, and that was the beginning of the professional life.
So that's how he got his start.
Oh, cool. What is the menu like that he developed?
Well, it's a wide variety of different things. It reflects his own Spanish, specifically Catalonian background, but also his time in Singapore and his love for Japanese food. And so I said, it's like fusion, right? And he didn't super love that, because who is to call things fusion? But I'll play that clip for you.
Yeah, fusion has gotten a bad rap for sure.
Well, and his argument, which he's about to make, is that everything is fusion. Take a listen.
Let me ask you one question.
Yeah.
What is fusion?
Oh, that's a great question. All cooking is fusion
Exactly.
because no country has just existed
Oh,
and nobody's left.
finally, yes. I found someone with my same thought process. Because fusion, in one time of the history, was the moment that all the American ingredients became to Italy. And you cannot imagine Italian traditional cuisine without tomatoes. You cannot imagine that. But there was a moment that traditional Italian cuisine was done without tomatoes before the 1492, or probably later. So that's what I'm trying to say. Fusion is only understood in space and time. When it's happening now, it's called fusion. When it's in the future, it's not.
And he's right.
Yeah. I mean, we started using the word mashup, but I mean, that sounds like a mess. So I think we need to bring back fusion in a good way. I mean, if we define it as something that's well thought out and not just a mess of things put together.
Well, and to Pepe's point, everything is fusion, because no cuisine exists in a vacuum. In the early days, like around the turn of the century, even before then, the term fusion confusion came up, because there were so many kind of just clumsy mashups.
Definitely.
And one of my colleagues at the time, who was more of an artsy type, in fact, he's now an editor at Art News, wanted me to coin the term post-fusion, which sounds very artsy, but I tried. It didn't catch on. But post-fusion is, instead of being really self-conscious about smashing two cuisines together, you just use whatever ingredients are available and whatever your cultural background is. And that's sort of what Pepe Moncayo is doing. So it's less self-conscious and more intentional, I guess. Would you like to learn about a squash chawanmushi that he served in 2022? I asked him about that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Did he open the restaurant during the pandemic?
He opened it right before the pandemic in February
Oh gosh.
of February 8th, I believe, of 2020. So they got through it. Do you find that people are more interested in talking about the pandemic now than they were, say, a year ago? Like, I think we were in such shock a year ago that we just wanted to talk about moving forward.
Yeah, I don't think we had recovered from it yet, but I think people are on the other side now. And it's really in the rearview mirror, and it's not like as an it doesn't have the emotional impact it had when we were talking about it a couple of years ago. So
Yeah, for a while when I was interviewing people, we just didn't bring it up.
no.
And this is actually a very common reaction to trauma. I was reading years ago the book A Distant Mirror by Barbara Tuchman. It's about the 14th century when the Black Death happened and half of Europe died from bubonic plague. And there are very few records in the archives of anybody talking about it. Like they'd mentioned in passing the great mortality, and everybody knew, like everyone witnessed it. Half
Right.
of the continent died, but so they didn't bring it up. It's traumatizing.
Yeah. I mean, some people are still blaming the pandemic for a lot of their woes, but it's getting fewer and fewer. So that's a good thing.
Well, and woes happen.
Yeah, I mean it, and rightly so. I mean it did cause a major upheaval in the industry, and so I'm sure there's still that upheaval to deal with.
For sure.
Yeah.
But let's learn about this squash chawan mushi, which is much more mundane than digging deep into the pandemic.
It was 100% vegetarian, but we did a bit of technique there. We even fermented, lacto fermented the squash to get all the flavor of it. Then we made a juice out of it. We made a vinaigrette out of it. There was seven preparations of the squash inside that chawan mushi. It was super good. I forgot about that dish, by the way. Now I remember.
So then I asked him, like, is that like, do your guests care that you do seven different things to a squash? And as Spanish, especially Catalonian chefs often do, he got kind of super philosophical. And he quoted David Kinch from Manresa, who wrote a book. Here's what he said.
There is this phrase that really stuck in my head that he says something that whatever a chef serves should be a balance between your ego and what the customer wants. So when I do a dish, I really like to put the things that I like to eat. I feel excited. I really want to share that excitement with people, but also I don't go too transgressive in where people are say, hey, what is this? That actually was a very nice cup of squash, warm delicacy of squash. It wasn't really something super bold to say that.
Is does he have any influences from like the Basque area, or is he more towards Catalonia?
Yeah, he comes from the suburbs of Barcelona, so it's
Oh,
really
okay.
more straight up Catalonian food. But he did a really interesting dish that I will tell you about, or I'll let him tell you about. But he, the when you make paella, the crunchy stuff at the bottom is called socarrat, which also is the name of Spanish tiles. And he did sort of something like that with sushi rice.
Paella, kind of paella, rice with a sofrito, but we cook it like a sushi rice, no, in the steamer. And we season it with vinegar and kombu. So imagine, no, sofrito, kombu, vinegar. And then when it comes from the steamer, we set it in a tray to make a block that we're gonna cut into perfect rectangles. We are gonna sear it to make it crispy. And because it's like a fully cooked rice, it's tender inside. So when you heat it up in the plancha and you make it crispy, it gets crispy and moist and soft inside. And then we topping that with gambas, red shrimp.
Yeah, red shrimp.
With gambas, with the tail, we do aburi that we cure with citrus salt. We cure it, we put it on top of it, and then we wrap it like in nori. So it's like a hot, crispy paella, gamba, nigiri. That's the last
Yeah,
thing that we are
that's
doing. And I cannot stop myself from putting one on my mouth every
one
day.
that
It's
crunchy part
super
on the
good.
bottom, that's called socarrat, right? Like the
Correct. That's actually the idea comes from there, like a socarrat nigiri.
So a socarrat nigiri. That sounds good, huh?
That sounds amazing. That's also like very popular in Persian cooking because I have a friend who, makes the crusty rice banam, and it's real art. I have never tried it myself, but I love it. Everyone loves that crunchy stuff on the banam.
Yeah, I think it's called tadik, but I'm not sure about that. And yeah, that's something I've always wanted to mess around with in my own cooking, but it's a skill. There is a place here in my neighborhood of Brooklyn, or the next neighborhood over, that it's a Persian restaurant, and they have some tadik dishes that are pretty cool.
Well, his restaurant, Crane's, sounds amazing. I would love to try it sometime.
Yeah, I would also love to check it out. I haven't been. This is the challenge with most podcasts. You get to interview the people, and it's nice that we have technology to interview people all over the world, but we don't necessarily get to eat the food.
Right. That is the downside.
So, Pat, I think we did a good job talking about menus in our first episode of Menu Talk with Pat and Brett. And
Yes.
I think now we can wrap it up and let our audience get on with the rest of their lives.
Sounds good. Well, I enjoyed chatting with you, menu talking with you, Brett. Always a pleasure.
Well, good, because we're going to be doing this every week for a long time if
That's
everything goes well.
correct. From all different places.
Yes.
So.
So thanks, everybody, for tuning in. And that's a wrap.
From your fryer to the table, it's a quick trip for crispy fries. But how about a crosstown delivery? McCain SureCrisp fries are designed to go from fryer to container to carrier to passenger seat across town during rush hour down a shortcut that wasn't all that short to a doorstep before they hit the table. And that first bite, the crispiness speaks for itself. To the last bite, McCain SureCrisp fries go the distance. See how far our fries can take your business at surecrisp.com/delivery.